sitting in for George Norrie. The website, strangeplanet.ca. So it's time for a little Godzilla versus Kong, a classic battle between two impossibly giant creatures. Now, I've only seen the trailer. It looks pretty fun, but movies aren't just for fun. Sometimes they're also about physics. In particular, this is a great chance to consider the physics of scale. So what happens when we make small things into big things? For instance, what happens if you take a normal gorilla and make him into a giant gorilla, and then you name him Kong, King Kong? How tall would he be? How much would he weigh? Would he be able to stand up even? All good questions. And you can read the whole story and get the answers in the news section, up at coasttocoastam.com. Back to more of my discussion with documentary filmmaker Ali Siadatan on The End Times and The Mark of the Beast, right here on Coast to Coast AM. We're back with Ali Siadatan talking about The End Times. Before the break, Ali, we were talking about the Battle of Armageddon, this great battle mentioned in Revelation that takes place in the last days before the new heaven and the new earth. And you were telling us about the location where this is to take place. And there's a passage in Revelation that talks about God pouring out, the sixth bowl of plagues or something like that? What does that refer to?
Well, speaking of plagues, those are things that, you know, we are essentially deciphering. You know, we're going forward and deciphering as the Lord continues to reveal. The big picture, the landmarks, are the ones that we can easily see now that actually Israel has started to come back. It's very literal. We can now see kind of the general context. The details are still unfolding. But this is a good example, this passage I just read about Zechariah 14 and this war centering around Jerusalem, and then the Lord comes and lands on the Mount of Olives. There is this incredible, you know, fight where he rids the world of this plague of evil. This is going to be a very evil thing, and everyone's going to be happy. And he ushers in a kingdom. Well, the people that say, hey, this has all happened 2,000 years ago, and all the prophecies have been fulfilled, they say, well, you know, when the Romans surrounded the temple in 68 A.D. to 70 A.D., and they destroyed the temple, well, that was the fulfillment of prophecies like this. And when the Holy Spirit went out and spiritually conquered the Romans, that was essentially Jesus doing what it says here. Well, that's very, very strange to think about the Bible in that way, because that's not how prophecy has been understood all the way till the time of Christ. Why would that change? And the details provided here are so accurate and so specific, they don't match that kind of liberty that someone would take with the text. And the reason for that, one of the reasons of the confusion is because in the Gospel of Luke, Jesus talks about the events of the destruction of Jerusalem at 70 A.D. But in the Gospel of Matthew, when they say to him, tell us the time, the signs of the end of the age, you know, tell us that, they ask him. He then actually begins to talk about the things that will occur at the very end of this age. And it involves, he says, it will be like the days of Noah. And when we look at the days of Noah, we see that the days of Noah were the days of the sons of God and of the Nephilim. This takes us back to that original age of the Bible where the foundations of history are laid, things that went wrong, things that God is going to correct through the Messiah. And it's very interesting. You're asking me about some of the landmarks. Well, yes, the return of Israel, yes, the return of the city of Jerusalem, but also one thing that my research led me into as I was trying to understand this interesting phenomenon, the UFO phenomenon, that started also in 1948, 47, around that time, it really took off. It's like, well, how
around the birth of modern Israel, at the same time as the birth of modern Israel.
It seems so. It seems that after World War II, where, you know, you look at Hitler, right? He wanted to create the 1,000-year Reich. Why why was it called the 1,000-year Reich to compete with the 1,000-year kingdom of Christ, which is mentioned in the book of Revelation, which is another window into this very event of the nations coming and worshiping the king year to year? The book of Revelation builds on that and gives us more details about what this kingdom will look like. And there are also prophecies in the Old Testament that talk about this kingdom of Christ, this thousand-year rule, which is an age of peace, where weapons of war are put away, where nations no longer teach their children about the art of war, and people and predators and prey live in peace with each other. It's a wonderful time of history. It's the Sabbath of history. So in 1948, we see the rise of the UFO phenomenon, and when researchers start to look into it, what we discover is that the heart of the UFO phenomenon is the creation of hybrids, and people go, what's all that about? Well, when you look into the book of Genesis, you see the beginning of the creation of these hybrids, and it happens through history. You know, there's the tribes that live in this promised land when Israel returns to it. The Anakim, the Zanzumim, the Raphaim tribes, they're all tribes of giants. We even have architecture from these giants, both in Israel and in other places in the world, like in the island of Malta, like in Baalbek. And also we see the story of David and Goliath, which is a type of the final battle. And then we are told that in the final age of history, at the end of the end times, and this is the dream that God gives the king of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar. He reveals to him the sequence of world empires, and he says to him that at the very end, in the final ages of the final empire, I guess that's where we are, that they, this mysterious plural masculine pronoun, they, the he's, will mingle their seeds with the seed of men. But it shall not adhere. And you go, well, what's that? Well, once you understand that there has always been this mingling of the seed between the fallen angels, the seed of the serpent, the seed of men, and you also see it in the abduction phenomenon, and you go, wow, this is actually happening, again, on a massive level in our age, and this may actually lead to, you know, the Goliath, who will be humbled by the coming of the Son of David. And this becomes another sign, because it says in that prophecy of Nebuchadnezzar that there will be 10 kings. It says they'll mingle their seed with the seed of man, but it shall not adhere. And then it says that there's 10 kings that rise in the next verse. And then it talks about how the stone comes, which is the Messiah, and hits the statue and the whole thing collapses. So that becomes another very important landmark that is not often discussed.
Right.
By, you know,
so it sounds like you're saying that at the heart of the alien or fallen angel abduction phenomenon and the alien human hybrid program is raising an army for the Antichrist to take part in the Battle of Armageddon.
Well, they live among us already. I mean, that's the latest research. They live among us. What functions they have to influence the culture, perhaps, as you say, to be an army. I think they may have, you know, many different functions, but definitely I can see that there's going to be a rulership that is of the seed of the serpent. And the parable of the tares and wheats, I think, talks about this, that when God planted his seed, and then it says the devil came and planted his seed in the garden, and the wheat and tares grow together. So it's possible that there has been this bloodline throughout the ages, all the way from the beginnings. Like, look at the beginning of Western civilization in the island of Crete. It says that Zeus had a child with Europa, and this child was King Minos of the island of Crete. And archaeologists tell us that's where Western civilization begins. And so the first king of the West was apparently a hybrid, the son of Zeus, Minos. And so there may also be a line of kings that leads to this final king. And there's this phenomenon that we are witnessing and documented all around the world. So that's another piece of the puzzle. And you're going to tell me that all of these things happened 2,000 years ago? The return of the Jews, the contention of Jerusalem, all of the technology that is needed to the mark of the beast, as you said, and so many things that require advanced technology, and then the arrival
right.
of the UFOs on a mass level.
No, you're right. It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense.
So let's
there's so much here that has never been fulfilled.
So we leapt ahead to the Armageddon. I want to back up now because these kings that are going to, you know, their armies that are going to gather at Armageddon. These kings that are going to be loyal to the Antichrist. So we need to talk a little bit about the Antichrist before the Battle of Armageddon. We need to talk a little bit about that 7-year period, which is, you know, the tribulation. And then we need to talk about the mark of the beast. So the arrival of the Antichrist on the world stage.
Right.
Let's talk about that. When do we have any clues as to when that will take place?
And we don't have a clue as to when it will take place, but definitely he's a character. He's a real character in the Bible. He's mentioned in so many different books. You know, as early as the writings of King David, which is who lived, you know, 1,000 years before Christ, in Psalms chapter 2, one of the first original Psalms, it says, I'm just quickly looking for it. Yes, there we go. Here it is. And it, sorry, this was not part of my, so it says, "Why are the nations in an uproar and the peoples mutter vanity? The kings of the earth set themselves up, and rulers conspire together against the Lord and against his anointed one," which is the translation of Messiah. "Let's rip their chains apart and throw their ropes off us. He who sits in heaven laughs, the Lord mocks them. So he will speak to them in his anger and terrify them in his fury. I have set up my king upon Zion, my holy mountain." And it goes on, "I will declare the decree of the Lord. He said to me, 'You are my son. Today I have become your father. Ask me, and I will give the nations as your inheritance and the far reaches of the earth as your possession. You shall break the nations with an iron scepter. You shall dash them in pieces like a potter's jar." So this battle of the kings of the earth against the Lord and against his anointed, the nations, this is prophesied as old as the writings of King David. Even in the Dead Sea Scrolls, it talks about the king of the nations, that when all these nations gather against the anointed of the Lord, they will have a leader. You know, the Dead Sea Scroll guys already figured out there would be a leader that would lead all these kings, and there are many prophecies about him in various books of the Bible. It's called the Little Horn. You know, he speaks incredibly blasphemous things against God and against the characters that dwell in the temple at the heart of time and space, the very rulership, you know, of the universe. He speaks against all of those things, and we see him appear in the teachings of Jesus when he talks about the abomination of desolation spoken by Daniel the prophet. So, you know, he takes an old story from the book of Daniel, and which people thought was already completed, which had to do with Antiochus Epiphanes, and he resurrects it, and he says, no, this is actually a prototype of a future event, and Paul continues to build on that in the letters that he writes. He calls him the son of perdition, the man of sin, and he is going to stand in the temple of God, it says, and elevate himself above all that is called God. And so he's definitely a character. He's the leader of these kings. When will he emerge? Some people say that the sign by which we will know him is that he will be the guy who will negotiate a peace treaty between Israel and its enemies in the region. He will be the guy who will finally do what no president has ever been able to do since the time of Jimmy.
Ah, wait a minute. What about the Abraham Accords, Ali? That the peace deals with Israel and the United Arab Emirates and Israel and what other countries were involved? Bahrain. That's right.
The United Arab Emirates. And there's the armistice that has been signed in 1979 with Egypt. But that's these accords. They're not peace the way that, you know, like other, this is, they're not peace deals the way. They're the beginnings of mutually respectful and friendly relations. There's also one with Jordan in place, and there's the one with Egypt. Also, is more like a cessez-le-feu, an armistice. You know, it's like, let's not shoot at each other anymore. It's not like, it's not peace the way this particular prophecy that is found in Isaiah that people associate with this character, the Antichrist. It suggests a comprehensive, true peace, like this seems to be, you know, it's called a covenant with hell, actually, but it seems to be some sort of, it elevates it to the level of covenant. Like, this is a serious agreement, so I think we're looking at something a lot more serious than what we've seen. So that's one.
So it's a false peace. It's a deception, right? It's a deception to lull Israel maybe into a false sense of security before the ten kings mount their offensive against Jerusalem.
Well, yes. I mean, if you look deeper into the events that follow, you realize, well, it doesn't actually bring about peace. So it has a bit of a Trojan horse feel to it. But I think it's also okay to sit back and watch these events unfold, and we'll have more of a detailed understanding of the nature of it. But it does seem to have a Trojan, horse feel, because what follows is actually, when people say peace and peace, it says sudden destruction comes. So the world is trying to, when Satan says to Jesus that all the kingdoms of the earth have been given to my dominion, and I'll give them to whomever I will, and the Lord says, no, I won't worship you, and he then ascends to God and gets a scepter of power, which ends the dominion of Satan. And since then, you know, it's been the fall of him and his structure. But these are attempts to keep it going. These are attempts to seal his power, to connect himself to the thing that matters to God, to put a footstool in Jerusalem and even over this people that have returned. Think of Israel as the edge of a spear. They will move forward into the next stage of history, and the nations will follow them, you know, as the Messiah comes to that specific region of the world, the same way that he was born in Bethlehem, but his ministry affected the whole world. It'll be the same kind of an event. So this is the final attempt, I think, of an ancient power, the prince of this world, to hang on. But we don't want this. The world has lots of problems. It's very corrupt. It's full of darkness. And we want the Lord to come to the earth with his angels, get rid of all of this, and bring in a true and lasting age of peace. And there are many things that are going to happen when he returns. It's going to be fantastic, and I think we can talk about.
All right, Ali, I got to jump in here. We're going to take a quick time out, come back, open up the phone lines, take questions and comments, and we will get into the Mark of the Beast. Back with more on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Sitting in for George Norrie. The fast-moving shooting stars of the Eta Accurate meteor shower are easy to view, making this astronomical event one to watch in spring. The shower peaks on the morning of May the 5th, 2021, but it should still be visible the preceding and following nights. Everything you need to know to catch it is in the news section up at coasttocoastam.com. And say, if you like what you're hearing tonight, this morning, and you want to find out more about what I do, you can go to my website, strangeplanet.ca, strangeplanet.ca. Everything is right there. And you can now hear me weekday afternoons, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern, the all-new Richard Serrett Show on News Talk Saga 960 AM across the Greater Toronto area, Saga 960 AM. You can stream it live on saga960am.ca or find it on Simple Radio or TuneIn, two terrific apps to listen to the radio on your mobile device. And you can listen to my weekly syndicated radio program, The Conspiracy Show, on AM 740, Zoomer Radio in Toronto. And my podcast, of course, Conspiracy Unlimited, drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Subscribe at conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com. Again, for all the information on all of these projects that I'm involved with, go to strangeplanet.ca. Back to more of my conversation with Ali Siadatan and your calls as we continue to delve into the end times and the mark of the beast right here on Coast to Coast AM. Ali Siadatan stays with us from Think Again Productions, and you can view his documentary UFOs, Angels, and Gods at thinkagainproductions.com. So let's jump ahead, Ali, because time is tight. At some point during the reign, I guess, of the Antichrist, during that 7-year period, he will Well, Revelation chapter 13, 16, verses 16, 17. And he causes all, the small and the great, and the rich and the poor, and the free men and the slaves, to be given a mark on their right hand or on their forehead. And he provides that no one will be able to buy or to sell except the one who has the mark, either the name of the beast or the number of his name. So what is this mark exactly? What does it signify?
I think it signifies this full control. What we saw through this idea of the rise of digital currency, with the Federal Reserve and central banks all over Europe in the summer putting out this paper that says that they are for digital currency, and that the United Nations Reset Agenda 2030 also says we should move to digital currency by 2030. The idea they told us, one of the goodies about it, is that if the Federal Reserve wants to put money into your hands, they can now do it directly into your digital wallet, and it doesn't have to, you don't have to wait for the bureaucracy, checks to be mailed. And of course, the side that they don't say is that if they also want to close your wallet, if you're on the wrong side of the ideological fence and they want to close your wallet, then they can also do that with a button. So I think it's a symbol of complete control, because once someone controls your finances and your access to the taxation system and the financial system, they pretty much have complete control over you. And yes, I think this happens in the last 3.5 years of his reign, which is mentioned all over the Bible in many different places in the Old and New Testament. So we know of the 7 years, which is ushered in through that peace treaty that I mentioned. The last 3.5 years of it are really what is the focus of the end time prophecies. It's going to be the climax of the power and of the enemy, and it says that the dragon gives him his power. So the worst of it lasts for 3.5 years.
All right, so is it literally a mark on the hand or the forehead, or is that a metaphor, or would you take it literally?
The rule that I follow with Bible prophecy is if you can take it literally, do. And so with the a microchip technology, and with now the coming of things like artificial intelligence and like Neuralink, you look at like Elon Musk's company Neuralink, and a lot of Silicon Valley billionaires are exploring this idea of putting implants like the cyborg, you know, reality that connects us to artificial intelligence to enhance our brain, to monitor our health. Who knows if there's going to be any more pandemics? Maybe, you know, you want to be connected to some central Watson-like computer that analyzes your health and tells you if you're going to get sick before you even know it. And you know, a drone appears in your front step and throws a medication on your front door. You know, I mean, so who knows? But we can already see that this can become reality, that there could be people that push this idea of implants. So I think, yeah, it can be taken literally with the way technology is moving forward.
Right. So there'll be no mistaking when the mark of the beast comes, because for years people thought, oh, it's the barcode on various products, or some people thought maybe, you know, it's this vaccine or that vaccine. And then you could sit back and say, well, wait a minute. There's an element of deception here. I don't necessarily know when I've taken the mark. So how could God judge me? Because once you take that mark, it's all over, right? It's eternal damnation. So if there's an element of deception, how could you blame people if they mistakenly took the mark? But you're saying no, it's going to be very, very clear.
Well, this guy is going to, you know, speak great things against God and against the armies of heaven. It says that he's even going to make lying signs and wonders. Fire come from the sky, what the prophets of Baal failed to do in the time of Elijah, he will be able to do, essentially. And he's going to go to Jerusalem. He's going to go into the temple. He's going to be worshipped. It says that there's going to be a death and resurrection story, like the story of Jesus with him. You know, the false prophet brings him back to life, and everyone's like, wow. So who knows whether they're going to have some sort of a technology or genetic science that even says, look, hints to the fact, and that we're going to be offering you some sort of an immortality to compete with God. And the whole idea that the fallen angels, which I do think are going to manifest themselves in this alien clothing, are going to be behind him and energize him. There will be no mistake. This guy is going to be a leader like you have never seen before, and he's going to do very specific things that are told about him in the Bible, and then he's going to institute this mark. So there won't be any mistake, you know. There's no worry about that.
All right, let's dive into the calls, and we'll begin with J.D. in Indianapolis. Hey, J.D., welcome to Coast.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Sarah. Hi, Allie. My question is, I think I heard you talk about New Jerusalem and how some people are going to go there. And my question is, what is New Jerusalem? Why do some people go there, and how do they actually get there?
Excellent question. So in Revelation chapter 20, we have a more detailed and expanded, explanation of the 1,000-year rule of Jesus, which I believe is literal for many, many reasons. And the Old Testament talks about it as being really an age of peace on the earth, the Sabbath of history. It's like 7,000 years are complete. I think it's from Noah. Some people say it's from Adam. I think it's from Noah. This is the 7,000th year of history. Then we are told that Satan is released again, and he deceives the nations. God himself arrives in what is called the heavenly Jerusalem. Its measurements are given, and it looks like a cube, to be honest. When you kind of take the measurements, I think that's, it's like the Borg, except this is God, so it's not bad. It's like a cube. And I think it is a temple, essentially, where the presence of God dwells. And it says that we will enter it, and we have a new body that has been given to us. If we believe in the Lord, when he returns, he gives us a new body. And in the 1,000 years, it's like we become teenagers. Right now, we're like kids. We become teenagers, and we begin to learn the ways of our job. It says that we're going to be royal priests, judging the angels, servants of God, with the Son of God. Humanity has a high destiny, and that's why we're even involved in such a crazy story. That's why we're involved with things like angels and fallen angels and the Son of God and all of these crazy things. You read this book and you think, this is our story? This is what's happening on this planet? How is this possible? Because of who we are. And there is an enemy that has tried to deceive us. So we enter this heavenly Jerusalem, which I think is a temple, essentially, where the presence of God dwells from where he rules over the creation. We have lots of, Revelation chapter 20 until the end of the book of Revelation, and you will get detailed accounts of what the inside looks like. And we are going to know God face to face, which is immense in intimacy. I can't tell you, in the context of the Bible, how great a honor is that, and it means we are going to be filled with all kinds of treasures of knowledge and wisdom, there'll be no more pain and no more crying, and we will have life in all the ages of creation, it says. So it's this is our destiny. I mean, we can't let anyone rob us from the truth that God has recorded and shared with all the nations throughout the generations. This is an indestructible book. The words of God have never been erased. It gives life meaning, it gives us direction, and it gives us clues, and we're moving in that, and we have the seal of the Holy Spirit in this age as a sign of things to come.
All right, J.D., thank you for that. Let's go west of the Rockies, and Sherry is in Long Beach, California. Good morning, Sherry. Welcome to Coast.
Oh, thank you, Richard. First time talking to you, and I just have to tell you real quick, every time I hear you, you remind me of Richard Dreyfuss. So you're going to need a bigger boat, and I just love you. I love your voice. I'm a little
thank
nervous.
Thank you so much.
But
you're
I
welcome,
love
Sherry.
Your voice. Okay, here we go. Can I ask your guest a quick question? How is your fear of passing away from this earth? How's your fear factor with that?
My fear factor?
Are you asking? Are you asking Ali?
If tomorrow's promise to nobody. If, let's just say, you had to go tomorrow and you had to go home to the Lord, how would you feel about that? Would you be upset?
No, I mean, I would have joy because I see now by really studying this book that its past is true and its future is true. And when I received the Holy Spirit, it awakened my consciousness to an awareness of God, which I have continuously with me. And so I see that it's all real. And so it would be a liberation. You know, I would be, it's like coming out of the womb, you know, and being born into the greater reality. So I would welcome it. I assume that God will take care of my family, but that would be my only concern, really.
Did you have a follow-up to that, Sherry?
Yes, I do. For thousands of years, we have multiple and thousands of people that have thought the Lord was coming. Back in 1999...
I mentioned that off the top of the show. That's right. The Christians headed for the mountains.
I understand that. Okay. So, hold on. I'm checking my notes. Hold on.
Well, let me just cut to the quick, Shira. You want to say, you know, throughout history, we've looked at, you know, the end times. It's just around the corner. 1,000, Y2K. So why now? Why this time are we certain?
You know, that's a great question because we're not certain in the sense that we don't know the exact time and hour, but we know the season because he commanded us to know the season. And Paul talks about the fact that he says that it may come as a thief in the night. It will come like a thief in the night. But you, don't be caught off guard because you are the children of the light. We are told to be watchmen and to look at these things and the signs of the times. So what we're seeing is that there's a massive convergence of so many signs, and we're seeing that the knowledge of Scripture is expanding, and we're seeing all kinds of new things that previous generations did not see. And as I said, the return of the Jewish people to this land after 1,900 years of absence is a massive sign, and many other things that we talked about. So it's a very special time, actually. Now, exactly how long will this last before it leads to the actual second coming, where this UFO phenomenon is going to eventually end up being the second coming, right? As the chariots of God return, because it says in Isaiah 66, verse 15, that the Lord will return with his chariots. And so as they come, and these guys that are here, and it finally has this, the final battle occurs, how long will it take between now and then? I don't know. But at least I can bear witness that we are in the season of it, because so many things are coming to light. So we don't know the exact details.
Right.
It's very different from the past.
Sherry, thank you for the call. I want to squeeze in one more first-time caller. Rich is in New Mexico. Rich, good morning. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Oh, we lost Rich. Okay, let's say hi to Case in Pueblo, Colorado. Hello, Case.
Hi there.
Hi there. Go ahead.
Well, I have several comments, but first I have a question. I'd love to know which Bible he's using to base his arguments on.
We mean which translation of the Bible?
Using Hebrew?
Well, I do consult the Hebrew when I really want to look deep into something, and the Greek in the New Testament. Why?
Okay, well, I don't have a Hebrew Bible. I use the King James Version, so I don't know how accurate that is, how close that is to the Hebrew. So what I'm going to say is what I've learned from the King James Version.
Okay.
First of all, many people don't know that the United States is specifically talked about in the Bible prophecy. And the Bible does say that all Christians are Jewish. It also talks about the nation of Israel, which is Israel, and it also talks about the nations of Israel, which is mainly Israel, Britain, and the United States. In Bible prophecy, when it talks about Assyria, it's talking about Germany. When it talks about Chittim, it's talking about China. It says in Bible prophecy that Chittim will destroy the United States economically, and that the king of the south, which is Iran, will attack the king of the north, which is Germany, and the king of the
All right, north, I've got to jump in here because I've got to jump in here just because we're short on time. So let's get Ali to respond to that. I mean, is that an interpretation, Ali, or is that, do you think, spot on what Case is saying?
Well, I don't think it's spot on. I think that there's a lot of things that don't make sense, like the kings of the north and south. I'll just point to that. Daniel, who wrote that prophecy, even though he was in exile when he wrote it from the point of view of a man standing in the city of Jerusalem. So when it says the king of the north, it means cities that are north of actual Jerusalem. When it says the king of the south, it means kings that come from the south of Jerusalem, which is North Africa. So it's actually spoken from a person who's there. It doesn't say that the nations of Israel, it doesn't say that the church is Israel, that the Christians are the Jews. That's called replacement theology. It is a perspective that has led to much of anti-Semitism and to erasing the destiny of Israel and not really understanding the prophecies that are occurring in the Middle East, actually, because the church has replaced Israel. That's not true, actually. The new covenant.
Okay, I've got to leave it there.
Yeah.
Sorry, Ali, we've got to leave it there. Always an enlightening discussion when you're on. ThinkAgainProductions.com, the website. People can watch UFOs, Angels, and Gods there as well. And Ali, just a great pleasure. Thank you so much for hanging out for the last 2 hours.
Yeah, absolutely. If people want to go on the website and sign up for the newsletter, they can. On Facebook and Twitter, my handle is UFOs, Angels, Gods, one word. Follow me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, communicate, and Clubhouse. If you're on Clubhouse, look for me at Ali Sieratan, and enjoy the documentary.
All right.
For the YouTube page. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, my friend. All right, open lines are next.